everyone, welcome to Empower, my power, your power, our power. On this episode, I am delighted to introduce a powerful woman and one of India's leading professionals in the finance sector, who is also a writer and now an entrepreneur, the one and only Shinjani Kumar. Shinjani Kumar is the co-founder of Salt, a digital platform which aims to change the way women consume financial services. Prior to founding Salt in early 2021, she was the country business manager for Consumer Bank, Citibank, India for 3 years. She has also led leadership roles. She's held them in Paytm Payments Bank, PwC, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and Reserve Bank of India. She has studied English literature from Delhi University, journalism from Time Center for Media Studies, and public policy from the University of Texas at Austin. She is also the co-founder of Indian Novels Collective, a non-profit initiative to promote Indian literature in translation. She writes short fiction and has been published by the Journal of Indian Literature, Out of Print Magazine, The Beacon Magazine, and others. Shinjani lives in Mumbai and Mukteshwar with her husband, who is a professor, author, and a lovely poet. So let's find out more about Shinjani Kumar from the woman herself. Hello, Shinjani.
Hi, Meenakshi. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you so much for taking out time for us. And we would love to pick your brains for all the possible financial advice we can get. So tell us, how did your journey in finance begin?
You know, there's a lot of serendipity in life. That's one thing I've come to realize. And for me, there was absolutely zero chance that I would have ended up where I ended up when I was little, because I was this very, very creative, passionate person. And I was brought up in Bihar, and you know, all Biharis, if they are a little bit bright, have to go and write some exam. In our generation, that was the only thing that they
were. Well, at least educated, right? There you go.
Yeah, because there was nothing else. Yeah. So my brother was actually writing the civil services exam, and I used to make fun of him for, you know, doing the Bihari thing. And he said, you'll never pass. And he brought me this form, and he said, if you qualify this exam, it's very hard, but you'll always live in a city. So okay. I went and wrote the exam. And I then went to journalism. I got admission to Time Center for Media Studies. So I went there, and as it happened, I did qualify that exam, and it was the Reserve Bank of India entrance exam.
Fantastic.
And and then I sort of realized that it was a big deal, so I went ahead and joined.
Lovely. So even by just hearing the beginning, it feels so inspirational, because I love, you know, we love having on our podcast empowered individuals, men, women, even young, you know, I've interviewed a teenager who's so empowered and accomplished, you know. So it's so nice to hear personal stories and hopefully take it out there to the world for everyone to know and get inspired by. So Shinjani, you've had such a different and remarkable leadership journey. What made you start Salt, and can you tell us, all our lovely listeners and viewers, what it is?
So, Salt is essentially a labor of love, because after spending almost 30 years in financial services, one thing that increasingly became clear to me, also because of the technology disruption that we have gone through, and the opportunities, that technology needed to be used for more people. Mm-hmm. And in a more meaningful way to make a more equitable world. Because having been on the other side of large institutions, it does become very clear that you're constantly thinking about optimizing for yourself, you know, maximizing profit, maximizing shareholder value, and that always leads you to focus on what is already profitable. And so we were, this co-founder of mine, Chaitra, she started talking to me about her idea to do a startup in the space of women, and primarily trying to draw upon the fact that regardless of the economic status, the gender divide exists when it comes to finance. So it's not just poor women that are unprivileged from
yes.
access to money.
Yeah.
In fact, you could argue that because poor men are also unprivileged from money, it's not as different, although it is.
Mm-hmm.
But across societal strata, you find that gap. So that idea somehow just took hold of me.
Right.
And the more we talked, the more it looked like something that I wanted to put the rest of my energy and passion into.
Of course, and your expertise, of course.
And expertise.
Yeah. So what are your initial thoughts on your client segments? Is it housewives, young women, older women, millennials? Because money is such a universal subject. How do you scope your market?
No, that's a very good question, you know, and it is something that we've debated a lot at Salt. So we have three co-founders. There's me, there's Chaitra, who I just told you about, and this is her second startup, and there's Aditi. All three of us have known each other for a longish time, and we have a great understanding, but we still spend almost 6 months debating exactly this issue, as well as other things. And one thing that became clear to us that if you want to actually make meaningful change, you need to build a product that the consumer can own and start to use, not just for themselves, but also to almost influence others.
Absolutely.
So the idea is to initially target that set of people who are almost influencers in their own right. And when I say influencer, I don't mean someone like you.
No, I'm a podcaster. Accidental influencer.
Yeah, because now that has almost become a category or a job. But by that, what I mean is somebody like, you know, this young woman I met in Rajasthan, and she just enjoys giving, talking to people and telling them what to do with their money. And she very proudly tells me, even my cousin from Dubai calls me up and asks me what to do with my money.
Yeah.
And we thought, you know, some people like that should be our first clients.
Yes, because the voices also.
Yes. So that's kind of the way we are going. But that can include housewives. That can include, but a lot of, there's a large number of women that work from home that are freelancers whose lives don't fit into the standard, financial services construct, which typically tends to be somebody who starts working at 22 and retires at 60 and on the way does SIPs, buys insurances, takes a mortgage or long-term, you know, planning projects. And we found that there were a lot more people live the lives where they don't think like that.
Right.
And I think all of those people should be Salt's clients.
Yeah, and you know, I have a 14-year-old son and I'm learning about NFTs and crypto from him. So he has convinced his father now and me to give him a little budget to invest, to play around, to buy crypto. So imagine when he was 13, he started, you know, and
sure.
Now at 14 and a half, we're like, okay, we feel you're old enough, responsible, here's your budget for the month. And I feel fascinated that young children now, teenagers even, millennials, you know, they are so knowledgeable. You know, at 14, I don't think I had this knowledge. So I think also digital media plays a large part. So, you know, well done you on the app and spreading the message across for not just women, but empowering, you know, young people.
Yes.
You know, the future,
yes.
You know, generations, it's fantastic. So I love it.
Thank you.
Tell me, are women better with money and what's the psychology behind that?
You know, at least in this country, we tend to get very very emotional on the subject.
Yeah.
So there is that whole thing about the woman being the Lakshmi,
yes,
or the woman being the Durga. And so what that does is that with all that unprivilege that you live with, all the discrimination that you face, you also have this double burden of being the provider and the,
yes,
you know, the sort of the
one who saves, the lucky one,
yes,
all these,
yes,
all these, you know, tags.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you have both, and I think in a way it is, and I'm sure a society can find that right balance to have the woman be that driver, as well as have that woman have the right access to modern technology and infrastructure and institutions to do both. But in our case, I don't think we've done that. So what has happened is something very interesting. So across societal strata, you will find it's a real thing.
Absolutely.
That women do save, women do find avenues to invest, whether
mm-hmm.
it is jewelry, whether it is, you'll hear so many stories of women who saved up money for homes and
mm-hmm.
then they gave it to their husbands when the husbands were planning to buy a home or something. And that will be, you know, that's like my mother-in-law was that woman. All of us know many of those women. because they ran their household, so they used the money. So while the men made the money, the women used the money. So in many ways, they were not getting paid for the job, but they were actually doing this really good job.
Yes, of managing, everything.
Of managing money, planning, creating a saving pool, understanding short-term, long-term liquidity requirements. So a lot of that was very subconsciously happening. And I think there is something that one can build upon it. One of the unfair things that we have done, and that's not just in finance, but across the board, is that we privilege information that is written in a certain type of English, comes from a certain type of school.
Like a stereotypical,
And that is hard to learn. And if you can't learn that, then what you already know doesn't get, appreciated or acknowledged. And then you begin to second guess yourself. And we see that is one of the things to counter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely. So tell me, what tips would you give to working women to save for themselves and contribute to the family?
Yeah, you know, that question means very different things to different people.
I mean, not only women, why not just everybody, you know?
Yeah. I think everybody who earns needs to think about the present and the future. One of the interesting things is that, you know, the world is becoming very woke in many ways, right? So people want to live lives that are very different from their parents and grandparents. Right. So nobody wants to buy a car. Everybody wants to be part of the shared economy. People want to
travel,
live Airbnb,
travel.
So we used to, our generation maybe used to save money and then wait to travel. This generation first travels and then thinks about all of those good things. And what I, and you want
experiential
to...
Experiential things, don't you think?
Experiential things.
Yeah, yeah.
Now the thing is, what you don't realize is that experiential things are, it's very good to actually give yourself that... that time and that attention, it's a really good thing. But everything does require money.
Absolutely.
It may not require the same kind of money that... So I don't think it was good for our generation to be sold those type of aspirations of, you know, diamonds and Tiffany's or
Bolo. Consumerism on another level. Yeah, designer consumerism.
Which I'm very happy that is not being... That's not setting the agenda. But what's important is that even this hippie life that you want to live, the woke hippie life, if that coffee also costs money. So money actually is not something that you can wish
for. Absolutely. So then I think balance is key, right? Because
understanding, balance and understanding and knowing where what is your locus, what actually makes you happy, what's the money well spent for you will be different from what's money well spent for somebody else. And then figuring that out and then using your money for the near term and for the long term. So you can't live with this attitude of saying, today is my, I was talking to this wonderful woman. She's a travel blogger. She used to actually work at Citi earlier and then she quit her job to become a travel blogger. And she said one of the early things that she realized is that many people who were in her profession, like her peers at that point of time, she said they had this attitude that going broke is a good thing. Like, you know, I follow my passion and if I go broke, then that's my trophy, that's my medal.
Right.
And she said, I wasn't comfortable with that.
Absolutely.
I didn't want to go back and have to ask my parents for anything. So even though I had left a stable job and I was trying to do something which was pursuing my passion, I wanted to be very clear that I would be sorted on money.
Yes, secure, so financially secure.
Yes, and that again may mean different things to different people. But to pay attention to it is the... So to your question, what is the tip I'll give?
Mm-hmm.
The tip is that do not treat it as something that happens automatically. It is as important as...
Yeah, it's not an afterthought also. Yeah, exactly. I agree. I mean, even, you know, like I see the shift in the way people live, in the sense that they don't mind living on rent now, whereas old school thing was pehle ghar khareedo. You know, first buy a house, assets, you know, then you save, then there's, you know, there has to be savings in your bank account, there has to be some form of jewelry. The old school way was that, you know.
Yes,
so you secured your full life and your future first and then lived in the present.
Yes.
Now it's a lot about living in the present and then, okay, getting away with whatever you can to move forward. And then when you're older, then worrying about that. But I think somewhere there's a shift, but there's the balance would be ideal, you know?
No, you're right. I think some of the old generation way of doing things is that by the time you save the money, you didn't have the needs to go on that hike.
Exactly.
And it really didn't make sense, right?
Yes.
But in the current, so in that sense, it's good that people are actually living the lives that they need to live. But then again, they need to think about their future, because it's not automatically going to take care of.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Yeah. I come from a family where my parents' side always saved 90% and spent 10%. And my in-law side, who kind of spent 60-70% and saved. However, they had their assets sorted, you know. So they had the luxury of doing that, but they also loved life. So they traveled, they did everything they wanted to, fulfilled all their desires. So that's why I know both ends of the spectrum, because I know that my parents, like when I got married, I realized how much money my dad had. I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know we could afford all this. You know, because he kept us on such a strong budget. And so, you know, he brought us up like the tough way, you know.
Yeah.
Like, don't take the car, take a rickshaw. You know, like, he brought us. But I love it because, you know, today you can balance it and know both, you know, both ends of the spectrum and kind of make your choices accordingly. You know, it's the best of both.
So one of our principles at SALT actually is to make people pay attention to their money without making it painful or...
Yeah, that's
so
nice.
That's our design philosophy. Like, don't ignore it. Uh-huh. Don't get obsessed with it. You know, there was this pathological problem about people teaching their children to, you know, continuously make more money or judging your self-worth by how much money you are making or how much is in your bank account, or women judging each other by how much jewelry each one has. There's been some of this very pathological obsession about thinking about money, and that creates this very negative emotional
even insecurities,
you know? And insecurities.
I mean, something simple as where you live in a city, you know, if you live in a prominent, a more old money prominent area, you're cooler automatically, and that doesn't mean anything.
It means nothing.
Yeah, because there are people moving from a particular area to newer developed areas to get larger homes or just better lifestyle, more green areas. So it's just, you know, it's quite, it used to play on people's minds, you know, like you said, psychologically.
People would say, oh, can't marry that boy because he doesn't have his own house.
Yes.
Or you go to a wedding and people say, oh, you're not wearing real diamonds.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of that pathological, you know, attachment to money and its signifiers.
Yes.
And I'm very happy that
that's broken
down.
For sure.
Yeah. And when that breaks down, then it's very interesting to see how the new generation uses actually a lot of technology to create their comfortable spaces. So you know, if they are hippies, they'll find enough hippies.
Yes.
They don't need to actually go to their parents for validation of their lifestyle, because the parents will never be able to validate it.
Absolutely.
So one girl we were talking to, and I think you were on that call, right? When we were talking crypto, and she said, the reason I invest in crypto is because my father doesn't understand anything of it. And so he'll have nothing to give me an advice on, right?
Yes.
And that I
she probably wanted to break the norm and have that independence, you know, to decide.
Because in the end, it's about you, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly what I was going to mention next, our Clubhouse chat. So we recently took part, everyone, in a Clubhouse discussion, which was super interesting, on discussing money with your honey. I love the title. I wanted to discuss that here, as there were some great points, okay? So how should couples, according to you, Shinjini, discuss money and savings, and what challenges do women face in doing so?
You know, the reason we did that session was also because of this. As I said, our philosophy is to make money and money conversations easy and comfortable. Mm-hmm. And we will help you with that, right? So the idea is that even in your previous question, when you said how should a person, particularly a woman, look at her contribution to the house and to herself and to her family, right? You do want to live your life, and at the same time you have these responsibilities. And everybody needs to make their judicious allocations, because you can't live your life to the fullest and allow your children to be broke.
Absolutely.
Or you can't put everything for your children and then, you know, resent them later because you had such a tough life. So both are not good.
Yeah.
So therefore, the idea is to, again, find what works for you in that sense of the balance. So like your in-laws family, if they already had the assets, they could afford to do that, and vis-a-vis somebody else who may be looking at it differently. So money with your honey, I think the idea is that because you're living with somebody, again, money will not become invisible. It will not solve for itself.
Right.
If you put it, brush it under the carpet, pretend like there is no problem, someday that will surface and it will make things very hard for you. Or something else will be a problem and money will become a manifestation of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to, so all we were trying to talk about and encourage is that talk about it.
Yes.
Just be conscious of it and say, and you may not, you don't have to do 50-50 across the middle. So in fact, I was talking to the team when we were having that conversation, and one of the things they came up with is that major expenses should be 50-50. And I said, one could do that if it works for them. If, you know, if both are, we know couples who are on splitwise and who will.
Yeah, it depends who, whether both are working, how much they are earning, what if one is earning much more, you know?
Exactly.
So you have to decide for yourself.
So like in my case, for example, right, I am the person who earns a lot more than my husband, which is a slightly unusual family because my husband is a scholar, professor, intellectual. I'm the person who straight into financial services, I made the money. So if I have a house for which I have to pay rent or an EMI, it's really, really large and I will pay it.
Right.
That doesn't mean that the sense of worth in that relationship of the other person, whether man or woman, should be any less.
Absolutely.
But if you don't talk about it, that can become an issue. If you talk about it, it's cool.
Yes.
It's cool because you know what each one is bringing to that relationship. So I think in it is important for you to define your own system. 50-50 may work for you. One of the cool things we figured in that conversation was that, you know, if you know what credit cards you use and what your wife uses and you consolidate your rewards, you can probably get more value out of it than both of you are splitting it. So, yeah, there are some cool things you can do with money. If you approach the subject of money without that baggage and without that sense of, oh my God, today is that horrible day of the month when I have to sit and do something with my money, then it can become fun.
Yes, and I think one of the young girls who was there, who was in a living relationship earlier and then they got married, she brought up a good point that it's become a topic of fun conversation for them.
Yes.
So when they talk about the stocks they invest in or they talk about just expenses generally.
Aditi.
I think so. Yes,
and they compete with each other.
Yes.
Because they have different investment strategies.
Exactly. So it can be, it should become easy. You know, it should be just a normal conversation, like talking about any form of work that you do or, you know, talking about any topic you're interested in. So if you integrate it into a part of your everyday conversation, even if it has to be had once in a while, I think that's quite healthy, don't you think, moving forward.
Absolutely. In fact, it shouldn't be the other way around, where a lot of these things really irritate me when, you know, guys say, oh, why do you want to talk to, I'll say, I want to talk to your wife because I'm doing this new thing and I want to get more insights. And they'll say, oh, but she only spends. And then all these jokes about, you know, you know, she has my add-on cards or she...
I've heard it all in my family, don't worry, because I used to not work for many years, so I've heard it all.
And it's like, it's almost like your contribution to the house or your value is diminished somehow, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we definitely want to make that. And if somebody was to say that to a very smart woman, she would step up and she would say, then, you know, how about I'm raising these two wonderful children?
Absolutely.
It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of effort.
Yes.
And how is that money?
We're all empowered in our own way.
Yeah.
Aren't we?
Yeah. And we need to, you know, fight for
state
that.
State it.
State it.
Don't even fight. I mean, state it. You know,
state
be very
it. Because,
clear.
You know, you or I may have sorted it out through that whatever process. But there are many women who will be living in these situations and wondering if they are the only ones.
Yeah, in the shadows, with the stigma, with the tags of just being like...
Just a housewife.
Labels.
You ask
labels.
People, they'll say, what does your wife do or what do you do?
Yes.
They say, I'm just a housewife.
Yeah.
What is just a housewife?
Yes, I agree.
It's a job.
So I'll give you an example. I'm going off track a bit, but I volunteer at an NGO, pro bono, since 6 years. It's my sixth year. So... I never spoke about it, but all people would see when I was not working is, oh, she travels, she shops, she loves to go out, she's always out. And no one would see that. And even when I posted on Instagram or Facebook, it would be the going out pictures or the travel pictures. I would be like, who wants to see me teaching underprivileged kids? Once in a while I would do it. That was my personal joy, my personal world. And so sometimes it used to pinch me when people would say, oh, she's just, you know, she just loves shopping and travel and dining out and partying. And you were like, but there is so much more to me, you know, and oh, her husband's, you know, always working so hard. And you're like, okay, you know, so yes, I understand completely because I've been there, I've worked, then I've not worked for many years and I'm working again.
Yeah.
So I can understand both sides, you know. So,
and all of those choices you make as a couple, as a family.
Right.
So, and money is an important part of that discussion. It should not go, it should not be taken for granted and that, you know.
Absolutely.
You are force-fitted into that narrative of the woman.
Yes. Typical.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you buy designer stuff because you come from that place. Somebody has to buy it, right?
No, but I feel even with women from small towns or people who are financially less, you know, well off, it doesn't matter because they may have their labels. They may be like, oh, you know, she's just, you know, cooking all day or she's just... And they may have fantastic minds. They may be saving in their own way. they may be amazing decision makers for the family. And, you know, to break that. But I think the app is really going to help, coming back to Salt.
Yeah.
And I'm loving the fact that you're making it so easy and accessible.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like, oh my God, I have to go talk to some, you know, widow person whose language I will not understand. And that whole mindset of, oh my God, this is a meeting about money, you know.
Yeah.
It has to become like a part of your daily life.
Yeah,
you know?
And somewhere I think it should push you to think
yes.
for yourself.
Yes. So on this note, we've all heard working women say, my money is my money and my husband's money is also my money. I don't know. I mean, this is what it says. There are these kind of quotes. What's your take on that?
That's a short answer, Meenakshi, because in my case, my husband's money is his money, but also my money is his money.
I love that. Yeah. I want to get there one day.
So I bought a house in Mukteshwar,
right.
You know, 4 or 5 years ago. And when we went to see it, my husband's wonderful. His sense of money is very interesting because, you know, he's very cerebral and so material things are not really that important to him. But I like the house. I said, let's buy it. And he felt very intimidated by the idea of, you know, buying another
second
house.
Home,
and,
yeah.
like, you know, how long,
right.
how much time we will spend here. Which, but I was like, I think I'll buy it. And he was like, it's your money. You want to
yeah,
buy it, just
absolutely.
Buy it. And
yeah.
I bought it. But, you know, the joy that then now he gets because it's a really nice place for somebody like him to be in because he's a creative person. It's
yeah,
quiet.
A lot of nature.
There's
yeah.
a lot of nature.
Yeah.
So that I just feel like as a couple, you are, you know, you're sharing everything, right? That's the whole easy and difficult thing
yes.
in a marriage. But unfortunately, when you share other things like, you know, the burden of raising a child, waking up at night. Like, nobody knows how we raised our child, right?
Right.
I don't know how you raised your
right.
child. Or you know, somebody gets sick and somebody has to take care. So there's so many things that you share.
Yes.
Only when it comes to money, all these, a lot of these stereotypes kick in.
Yes.
Right?
So why not share everything there too?
Exactly.
Yes,
so
of course.
Okay.
So, how is your brand, I would like to know, different from other financial services companies? And what motivated you to start this platform for women?
So as of now, we are still building. So we don't talk too much about the product. But effectively, as I said, the idea is to build something which triggers that, you know, that sense of independence and ease and worth of taking charge of your own money. So you will see it once we are, you know, once we do the beta at least.
Okay.
But philosophically, I think we are a little bit different. We don't want to either educate people because we feel it's a little bit not required. There is enough education around. And frankly, money is not that complex a subject as it is made out to be. You don't have
yes.
to pass an exam and become an investment banker to know that, you know, your child will go to college and you'll need
yes, absolutely.
You'll need to funding, right?
Actually.
Or if you fall down today, you'll have to go to an hospital, so you might need insurance.
Right.
These things are not so complicated. They've been
right.
made complicated by very smart bankers and insurance managers
yes.
and regulators because everybody
right.
wants to sort of take this seriously.
Correct.
And we just want to make sure that people don't miss out on their opportunities with money
mm-hmm.
because it is so complex.
Yeah,
so
make the money work for you as well, as they say, right?
Yes, so.
In the right way.
Have fun.
So what is this about writing stories? Where did that come from? And do we expect to read more from you? How do you find the time?
Good question. You know, I started writing. It's a very interesting thing how I started writing short stories. I studied in the US, right? My
mm-hmm.
my public policy degree is from University of Texas at Austin. And I was working with a professor as a research assistant, and I was helping him on a book. So and he really liked my work, so you know, he paid me very well for it, etc. And then when I came back, he had some leftover work. So he said, why don't you come back and help me finish that work? And I didn't have the, I told him I don't have the time and I don't want to leave the kids and go. But I'll help you hire somebody. But he was like, no, you have to come and help. So I took 4 weeks off from my work. And I went to Austin to help him with the book. Now, as it happened, by the time I reached Austin, something happened in his life that he had to leave Austin and go to some other place. And so for 2 weeks, I was just sitting there. I'd taken the flight to go and help him, but I really had like very little to do. And so I sat down, and it was a very nice, quiet apartment. I think it was the first time in my life that I'd been so alone.
Right.
And so I started writing. Of course, I read a lot. I've always been a very interesting person.
Reader,
and my
yes.
husband is a writer, poet,
yes,
so
yes.
all of that. But that was the time that I just sat down and I wrote 10 stories.
Wow.
And yeah, and then I came back and I just put it under on the shelf, and I wasn't really interested in it. And over the last 3-4 years, then I started to gradually publish them one or the other. Because,
nice.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward
but
to reading.
I think I'll do more.
Great. So tell us more about Indian Novels Collective and what's the story behind that. And
yeah.
Yes, please.
So how much time do we have left? I don't want you to run away.
Oh, don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah, very good.
So,
how sweet.
So the Indian Novels Collective is a very personal story again. All good things happen if you listen to your own, you know, body and your soul and your mind. So at some point of time, my son was at the National Law School in Calcutta and he was not well, and I had to go and take care of him. So again, I was alone and I was isolated, and for me, reading is always that thing I do when I get the time. So I picked up a book which was about it's called Moner Manush. It's a Bengali book. I was reading it in translation. It was translated in Hindi and I was reading it in Hindi. And because I read a lot of translations in Hindi, I grew
right.
up with that. My family has a lot of those books. So I read it, and it was the story of Lalan Fakir, who is... So it just hurt me that I was growing up like a few hundred kilometers from where Lalan Fakir was such a big legend, and I didn't know anything about him.
Right.
If I hadn't been stuck in that particular situation, I would have died without knowing anything about this amazing, amazing, incredible man. So my idea was that in this country, which is so vast and has so much rich literature, so
Correct.
Many rich, you know, so many rich experiences that are
history
that
and,
are documented
yeah.
in different languages, all we end up reading is you know, English books, because they're readily available, and because for some reason we all started to read in English, and then we read global books translated in English.
Correct. Correct.
And so we read Spanish books. We read you know. Everything. We
French,
absolutely. Dutch. All of us, like I was a literature student, I grew up reading, you know, as much Maupassant and Balzac and everything rather mm. than... And then I thought maybe Indian books, if we had really good translations of Indian literature...
More people would read
maybe
them.
Maybe more people
yes,
would read them.
Absolutely.
And so that's where it started. And then I came back to Mumbai and I started to talk to my friends, and I was very lucky to find at least 4 amazing friends who... were immediately willing to
translate and work.
And
yeah.
So we did various things. So we do a lot of performances. We do translations. We
okay.
just had 2 of our translations out. Yeah. So it's a long term project. These things take time, because I'm also learning that it's very hard to get rights. You know, authors die, and they, for some reason, their families become very possessive about their books. They'd rather. I don't know why, but it's not easy.
It's with every form of art, trust me. I've heard it with even art curators, with collectors, of how it is when artists
yeah.
and their families they have to deal with. So
yes.
I think it's just because they are such personal, you know, passion projects most of the time.
But yeah, we will definitely do this and we'll get it.
Yes, fantastic. So what is the best and hardest part of managing your business, and what inspires you on a daily basis?
What inspires me on a daily basis is, it's a funny thing, but I have to tell you this because I recently said this to my team and to my son. You know, when I wake up every day, I have this very strong sense of saying that if I don't do something well, somebody else will do the same thing badly. It's a horrible thing to say.
I love it. I like the confidence.
It's not
empower.
A nice thing to say. But that's what keeps me going, because
right.
otherwise you can always, you know, it's very nice, very tempting to sit in the sun and read a novel and
right.
bake an apple
just put your feet up
and
yeah
coffee, right?
Exactly.
But the moment I go into doing that, I start thinking, you know, there are people who are making apps, who are people who are trying
yeah.
to sell finance to women, people who are...
And I can do this so much better. I know so much more. That's what you're thinking, right?
I'm not so sure if it's about being better or a thing, but it's about giving it my best shot.
Absolutely.
It's about saying, Why yeah. am I not doing it? So yeah. yeah, so I definitely have this kira in my head, which keeps, and I must say, like, also because I live in a household which is very creative and different,
right.
It also pushes me in a very interesting way, because I get a lot of insights from, especially living with Ashwini, because a lot of his work is around development and women and discrimination and,
yes.
You know, migrant workers and...
he's a professor
violence.
And a poet, you said, so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So what happens is that just that constant feed, like
yes.
people read feed on their phone.
Of course.
I have this feed in the house.
Live feed.
And that feed then makes you realize that the world is not the bubble in which I live.
Right.
You know, like financial services, that is a very dangerous
yes.
thing.
Yes.
You can very quickly begin to live in your bubble because, mm. you know, your building is secure, your money is secure, your
right.
whatever. But I can't ever have that. So
right.
unlike my peers in financial services, I always have this thing, niggling thing, because there's a real world out there.
Absolutely.
Which is inside my
But
house.
That's great, right? So you are out of that and you're experiencing both sides, you
yes.
know? So also that beautifully ties into our last question, that it's fascinating how many things you combine in your story, you know? From finance to romance, let's put it that way. Also, it's unusual to find a banker married to a poet. So what's that like? And is it inspiring for you? And is it boring for him sometimes? Or is it also fun for him?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's boring for him, especially now with the Zoom and...
No,
you know,
you've made up with the home. Don't worry. With the holiday home.
Yeah, I made up for
yes,
it.
Yes, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So when we...
Wise investments, people.
Yes, yes, for sure. My
yes.
best investment ever. So, yeah, I think we... It was serendipity again. Obviously, when I met him, I knew he wrote poetry, but I didn't know he was going to take this, like, you know... full
on a professional level,
yeah. And but
it
is absolutely wonderful. As I said, I cannot become that person who lives in my bubble because I'm financially secure, because I live in an upmarket neighborhood, because I have a second home. I can't live that standard life. My life has so many windows, so many different so many different type of flavors that comes
yes.
in through that.
Yes.
And that is with age, I have begun to sort of be more receptive to that. Because when I was really young, then there's also that pressure in your career to keep moving ahead, to get your next promotion, to get your next bonus and things like that. So it was different. But as I have gotten older, I think that has happened. The other very lucky thing happened to me was that short stint in Paytm.
Mm-hmm.
I think it gave me an exposure to a very different world of technology. And I'm very happy that at this stage I've been able to bring it all together.
Yes, all the knowledge over the years.
There is technology, there is finance, and there is this whole big cause of women. Because if you don't have women getting access to finance, you can't have a better
yes.
world. So I think I'm very
yes.
happy at this point that it's all...
Lovely. It is 50% of the world after all. We make it, you know. Yes, yeah, so thank you so much. So much, Shinjini, for sharing so much of your life, your work, and yourself. And it brings us to the end of an insightful and informative chat with the one and only Shinjini Kumar. Thank you again for sharing your motivating journey with us at Empower. And thank you, my lovely listeners, for tuning in. Don't forget to catch up on all this and more on my Instagram and Facebook, Meenakshi Kuwadekar. And feel free to email me anytime on empowerbymeenakshi@gmail.com. And for all the so much more quick tips, you know, Q&A with Shinjini, check out all our feeds and her app too. So until then, keep shining, keep smiling, have a safe and fantastic week, everyone. And don't forget to own it.